Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Podfather. My name is Alex.
My name is Jordan.
We are back again. New format, new season. Podfather ready to go, 2019.
And you didn't believe us, did you?
No.
Here we are, fortnightly, just as we promised. Look at us go.
Just as we promised.
And
two
next
for two.
Fortnight, too, I promise.
Well, we'll see. We've been very hard at work, guys, so please, attention, pay it. This week, we're going to be talking about Joker.
Yes.
The new film about the Joker from the Batman universe.
Yep.
But before we do that, I don't really have anything to talk to you about. Do you have anything to talk to me about?
Only biscuits.
Let's talk about biscuits.
Alrighty. So, got these from Aldi. One of the few Arnott's selections.
Your new workplace?
My new workplace. One of the few Arnott's selections.
Oh!
That's the sound of Alex seeing TV snacks, malt sticks.
Have we ever done a TV snack?
No. No, we haven't.
Wow. I used to love... I don't think I've ever had that flavor, actually.
Did you have the blue ones?
Yes. We used to always get the blue ones. And sometimes were there red ones?
I think there were different ones, certainly. But now there's pretty much just these malt stick TV snacks.
TV snacks always had a fascinating box because they're very slightly V-shaped. They're kind of tapered in.
Like a V.
I guess, right? Like the TV in V. But it always used to also kind of remind me of like, like a TV stand or something, a bit like a caricature of a TV stand.
And there's TVs on the box?
There's TVs on the box.
We're really describing this visual quite a lot for an audio medium.
It's not a very nice color though, that one, that yellowy orange thing.
But I guess it's yellow for malt. Now I'm going to open it. These are great to have at the movies, by the way. Also, tiny teddies are great to have at the movies. They're a great movie snack. You take out the plastic, pour it into the cardboard
box.
Because then you're not crinkling and being disrespectful.
And you sneak it in your backpack?
Oh, yeah. Or in your Woolies bag or your
Aldi bag. I'm going to take a couple here because I know I want more than one. Although I don't think I've ever had these. These are finger-shaped. You'd call these fingers in the business, wouldn't you?
You absolutely would. They're very small fingers, though, like an infant.
infant fingers. If you stack them together, you get a fat finger, an Elton John finger.
Yes. All right, let's cheers.
That's actually one of the most boring things I've ever put in my mouth.
Oh, that's controversial.
It doesn't have anything to it.
It's malt. It's almost like a biscuity Malteser, long.
But not good.
But without the fun excitement of a Malteser. But they're still very Moorish.
I mean, I'd literally eat the whole box because I'm crazy. But I much prefer the blue ones.
It's almost as if you need to have another one. So that there's some substance to it.
There's not enough in one, and I think this is an important biscuit metric. There's not enough in one to kind of, I'll have a few more. I mean, I guess that's why they're called TV snacks, because you snack on them. But, oh, Jesus Christ. But I think that if you're going to make a biscuit, it should speak for itself. These don't speak for themselves. They speak in groups. I give it a 4.
All right. I'm going to give it a 5. I do quite like them, but they are just an average biscuit. So that means that it's a 4.5. And if you're going to rank them amongst the other biscuits, they sit towards the lower end of the Arnott's Podfather scores.
A lot of our biscuits have got pretty high scores.
They're actually
we like biscuits.
Equal last.
Equal last.
With Tim Tam Messina Black Forest. But I think that's a little unfair. I would much rather eat a whole box of these than...
One of those
Tim Tam Messinas.
But we're not rating the box of biscuits. We're not rating, the assortment of
individual
things.
Biscuit.
Yeah, individual
if
biscuit.
If you're going to enjoy a movie with it, there's actually nothing on that we have no movies on 4.5. But we do have some. We've got one on 5, Tequila Sunrise. And we've got a couple on 4.25, King of New York and Gangs of New York.
Uh-huh.
These would enhance all of those movies, I think.
Yeah, they probably would.
So,
I'm not sure if they'd enhance it as much as an actual Tequila Sunrise, which we have this week as well, running theme lately.
Yes, sort of being...
We're getting through the bottle of tequila week by week.
I mean, what else are we supposed to do? Delicious. It's almost become a ASMR episode.
Well, I think we should bring a little bit more ASMR to the biscuit corners of the episodes.
I think so too.
That's what I try to
if
do.
If you like chewing, yeah, you're going to love this podcast.
I'm very, very excited to sink my teeth into discussing this film. Are you?
Oh, yes. There's a lot to talk about with this movie.
I think there's a lot to talk about. We saw it last night, so we're fresh.
On 70 mil?
70 mil at the Astor Theatre, our favourite cinema. Mm-hmm. If you're listening, Astor Theatre, we're open to sponsorship. Pretty busy session.
Yes.
It was second night.
A lot of edgelords.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Just, you know, people that, hey, let's go see you. People that fucking clapped afterwards, wearing their Batman shirts.
All right. Before we get to that, it was a nice experience. The cinema, as always, go to the Astor Theatre.
It was wonderful.
They had the projection on the curtain, which I can't remember what the hell it said, if not it's on my Instagram.
Put on a happy face.
Then we were treated to a bespoke sort of pre-roll of ads and trailers.
That they do so well at the Astor.
They do that very, very well. And I'm not sure, do you have any idea whether that was happening anywhere else? Or, because with like, obviously with the Tarantino stuff, he usually says, okay, this is what's happening everywhere. But I got the impression that might have been a bit of a...
That's just the Astor. Like, yeah. I went and saw The Dark Knight there once, and they played that Tommy Wiseau Joker clip.
Oh, they
then
did.
As well. As well as ads from for Batman McDonald's toys and
right.
stuff. Like they always do a little trailers for the films they're about to show, which aren't always new movies. And then they also show sometimes old trailers that fit or old ads that fit. And that's what they did last night. And it really does enhance the experience. It feels like you're at the movies. Like
it really enhances the experience. And particularly with a film like this, which we'll probably talk a lot about later, it's very clearly influenced by Taxi Driver, and they showed the Taxi Driver trailer.
They
which
did.
For someone like us, I suppose, puts you in the right space a little bit. Or reminds you maybe of what's to come.
Or reminds you of a infinitely better film.
Oh, wow. I'm glad that we might be on the same page.
Oh, good. Me too. Thanks, Bob. Because we were excited to see this movie. You know, we like comic book movies in general.
Firstly, why are we covering it on a crime film podcast,
Well,
Jordan?
We did The Dark Knight. We did Solo. And this is a movie about a man that's committing crimes. So that's why we're doing it. And... also, we like to stay current-ish as well.
Yes, and I think it fits, especially because we did The Dark Knight, and there's always some, with anything to do with Gotham City and the Joker in particular, there's sort of gangster elements.
Yes.
He's got a bit of a gang normally. It's kind of all related.
Yes, it is related. I guess we should talk about the film itself. If you haven't seen it, we won't go into too many spoilers straight away, but it's basically this loner, sad boy who lives...
Sad boy is the right
word.
Who
lives with his mum, which is fine. So do I. And
so do I.
Yeah.
And my grandma.
Well, there you go. And he works for this, like, company where he dresses up as a clown and, like, holds signs. And it's like the 70s in New York, except it's Gotham. And kids beat him up and people stare at him. And he's got this condition where he just laughs all the time.
Can you do an impression of the laughter?
I can't really, but it's kind of like, like it's a real guttural thing.
Yeah,
like,
he snorts sometimes.
Yeah, and it's painful for him to laugh because he can't help it. Even if it's a serious moment particularly, he'll start laughing. And so people think he's a freak, people think he's a weirdo. But he meets this girl in his building and he wants to be on this show that Robert De Niro hosts, this late night show, which is basically just... hey, remember King of Comedy?
Well.
Remember Scorsese? And then he gets on and loses his job and goes a bit more nuts and shit happens.
Well, I feel like the way that you've described the film just then leads me into this question, which I think is a pretty pivotal question for this movie. If you removed all traces of Batman mm-hmm. and the Joker and the Wayne family and Gotham City... do you think it would have really changed the movie much?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It wouldn't have changed the movie much. It's just like a weird Taxi Driver, King of Comedy amalgamation. homage slash like wank fest, like and then on top of that you have to deal with spoilers now. You have to fucking watch the Waynes die again. How many times do I have to watch that on screen? That was the only moment where I'm like,
yeah.
There were a couple of moments I'm where glad I'm like, oh, you that's right. That too. We're watching a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. But then it's not going to go anywhere in universe, or it's just a standalone thing, which is good in a way because it's like, yeah, let's make standalone movies again. But also, it's not standalone because it's drawing on all these other histories. And it's like, we've seen it. When was it when Batman v Superman came out or something? Is that they show Batman's parents die in that in a flashback, I believe.
You know what? I can't remember. I feel like I blocked that memory out, but they might, and they definitely show it in Batman Begins.
Well, yeah, in Batman Begins they
show it there,
and they show it in Batman Tim Burton, and they show it in all the cartoons, and they show it in Gotham.
I was about to say the show Gotham. Which is
basically when I think it was when Batman v Superman came out, someone made a supercut of every time on screen the Waynes have died. And that's all I could think of when we watched it last night. It's it was a moment that really took me out of the movie they were trying to make.
Yes,
but then
it just
reminded me how fucking stupid this movie is.
Well, it was kind of the nail in the coffin for me because it happens towards the basically the end. And yeah, like everything you just said, and it's just like we don't need to be reminded that it's a Batman film. I mean, Joker, the character of the Joker is, I mean, as famous as Batman, surely?
Mm.
Like, they go hand in hand, which is probably unique, I think, compared with other superheroes. I can't think of any other superhero and villain combo that's so iconic. You know, Spider-Man's got a few. I mean, maybe the Green Goblin, but Dr. Octopus too. Like,
but still, they wouldn't be able to make, like, a like Doc Ock, like film like this.
No, but that's, I guess,
maybe
the thing.
Venom,
it's like,
and Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, they made a standalone. Well, and actually, I mean, we saw that together, didn't we?
Yes.
And I mean, that wasn't necessarily a great movie, but it didn't make some of the mistakes that Joker made.
It was still a fun movie.
Yeah. It probably felt a bit more standalone compared to, you know, I don't think they referenced Spider-Man at all in Venom.
They didn't.
And they referenced Bruce. I mean, Bruce was in the, Bruce had no business being in this movie at all. I liked Thomas Wayne. I thought that fit because everyone knows Joker's a bit older than Bruce and that was the time. And we saw it with some friends, talking to Jack about it afterwards, and it was really nice to see this side of Gotham from Joker's point of view, because it's usually through Bruce's point of view or through the Wayne family's point of view, and they're trying to fix everything. But they paint Thomas Wayne as not the best character, which was awesome and fascinating and really good. But I feel like he was only there as a reason to show Bruce. And it's like, we don't need, he's irrelevant. He's totally irrelevant, you know, to this whole story.
Although they try to make him not irrelevant, because they do that whole fake out, spoilers again. There's spoilers from this point on.
Yeah.
Where they try to make you think that the Joker is Batman's brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't mind the little kid that played Bruce. I didn't mind seeing Bruce. I won't lie to you. I didn't mind it. That was one of the more interesting story points because it was a little less, I'm so sad, ha, 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 like the rest of the movie was. There was something else that was happening. I didn't mind actually not knowing where the story was going for a little bit, as opposed to the rest of it where I was like, oh, people are mean to him. He's going to kill them.
Well, and I guess, you know, if you haven't seen – well, you probably have seen the film. If you haven't seen the film, I feel like 80% of this movie is just Joker getting wronged time and time again and feeling sad about it and laughing and crying. And I think – I don't know what about you, but I really thought that there was probably too many times that he was wronged. They tried to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
Too many sad boy moments of him just sitting there or laughing there.
With his rib cage hanging out.
With his rib cage hanging out and trying to make himself smile. I feel like, and this is kind of my main frustration actually, to sum it up, is that he was always going to do a good job.
Yeah, and he does do a good job.
And he does a fantastic job. And they leaned into that too much. He spoke for himself, I think. They could have cut out some of those sections or not used him as much, and it still would have landed exactly the same, and they could have had something else happening or maybe even make it a bit shorter and just kind of have a better film.
Yeah.
It could have been a better film.
I tell you what, like, let's talk about Joaquin for a little bit. He's always compelling.
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah. He was in a movie that we both saw last year called You Were Never Really Here.
I was going to bring this up.
Yes. Lynn Ramsey directed it. She's a brilliant director. And that movie is also a bit of a Taxi Driver homage.
It was billed as the Taxi Driver of our generation. Yes.
And it's one of those sort of almost a revenge thriller kind of someone going down a dark path, killing people. But the violence, it's shot beautifully in that film. Mm. Did we talk about it on an episode ever?
I feel like we might have mentioned it, but we haven't done an episode.
But it was, it's just a really beautiful film. So if you want to see Joaquin Phoenix in a Taxi Driver homage.
Yeah, watch that movie.
Watch that movie because it's gorgeous. And
it does, it does almost everything that the Joker does better, including dream sequences and like just being more experimental and just like believability and landing and all that kind of stuff, basically. I think that we should actually, I was going to suggest this, and maybe we can include You're Never Really Here. I think we should do Taxi Driver because we've never done that. We should do King of Comedy and maybe You're Never Really Here as well as a bit of a, you know, exploration into what are all sort of similar films. You know, obviously they've influenced Joker and we can kind of dissect that and look back to this and say, you know, maybe we'll like Joker more in 6 months' time. Maybe we'll have other things to say about it.
Maybe we will.
What a joke.
In preparation for seeing this, because I knew sort of what they were going for prior to seeing it, I did watch King of Comedy.
Had you seen it before?
I'd watched bits of it before, but never sat down and watched the whole thing start to finish. And that's a really good movie.
Mm.
And it's a surprising film, and it's just basically the same story. Funny guy that isn't funny, wants to be on TV, and he's a bit stalkery slash weird about it. With the host, played by Robert De Niro.
He plays the character
Pupkin. What's his name?
Rupert Pupkin.
And then, crosses the line and starts doing some illegal activity because he wants to be on TV. Cut to Joker 2019. There's a bit of a weirdo, not very funny comic who wants to be on talk show hosted this time by Robert De Niro, and then he does some illegal activity and ultimately gets on the telly.
Yeah. Which also, can I just say, I only saw the first teaser trailer. I had no idea Bob was going to be in this movie.
Really? You
so
didn't know?
I had no idea. So I was like the minute because he comes in pretty early on actually because the Joker and his mum sit down to watch the show, the Murray.
Yeah, the Murray something show.
Murray Franklin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
He's pretty much like a Johnny Carson type, I feel like. And I had no idea he was going to be in it. And he pops on the screen and I was like, of course he's in this. But also I'm so happy that he's in this. And he was hilarious.
He was really funny. He was almost very good. His performance almost gave me like, what's his name in The Hunger Games?
Well, I've never seen them.
Oh,
Phil Seymour Hoffman.
No. Listeners will know who I mean. Stanley Tucci in The Hunger Games. Like very almost flamboyant for Robert De Niro. Almost.
Yeah.
And he's sort of dancing and he's actually sort of, they've drawn his eyebrows on a bit darker and he's given him darker hair than he has now. And his makeup is quite, I mean, he's on TV.
He's looking quite good. Heavy. And you know what? It's getting me excited for The Irishman. If anything, this movie's got me excited for another Scorsese,
another movie.
De Niro movie.
Yeah, he was having fun. It seemed like in his performance.
Yes, and I think it also kind of, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I think that we're a bit, or at least I know I'm a little bit elitist in the sense that, like, you know, oh, it's just a Taxi Driver, King and Comedy mashup. Blah 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 blah. Like that's very me to say that, and I'll own that.
Oh, and me too.
But you know, there are plenty of people who haven't seen either of those films. Although, if you haven't seen Taxi Driver, what are you doing? King of Comedy, I can understand missing that one. If anything, De Niro being in there gave that a bit of credibility for some reason in a funny way.
It almost did.
Yeah, it gave it a bit more, and it was awesome to see Joaquin and De Niro acting together because I mean, you know. It is somewhat of a torch passing in a funny way because he is a bit of a De Niro back in the day. You know what I mean? Like parallels.
There's a fun story I heard online where, because there's a lot of discourse about this movie online.
I'd like to hear a bit about it. I've avoided it. Except for, oh, just quickly, did you see that Marty was bagging Marvel?
Yes, I did see that. I did see that. And you know what? Fair enough. He calls the Marvel movies more like theme park attractions.
Hilarious.
You know what? Doesn't mean that they're not fun and enjoyable and well made necessarily. But they are, you know, he doesn't think they're cinema. And I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a bit of discourse about this movie. But one of the stories that came out over the last week or so is that Joaquin Phoenix, you know, he's very intense. He's a very intense actor, as we know. And he would occasionally just have to walk away, you know, walk off and...
Oh, really?
I don't know. And the other actors, I think it's Todd Phillips, the director, who's saying this. Oh, yeah, the other actors thought they'd done something wrong. But no, it's just his process, blah, blah, blah. And then De Niro was talking about working with him and he's like, oh, he's a consummate professional, blah, blah, blah. So he never walked off when he's working with De Niro. Like, imagine that, being such a fucking diva, but then when you're not top dog on the bill, like, fuck you.
Well,
it's kind of, it's really funny.
Look, at the very least, it's good to know that people still respect Bob.
Yeah. Yes.
Even though he's literally on, I mean, I respect him more for doing this, but he's been on television more than once saying, fuck Trump.
Yeah. And he was talking about funny. Fox News. The other day, and fuck him. And this is Sunday morning breakfast TV.
It's so good.
Oh, he's very funny. Yes, so there's a lot of discourse, and particularly around Todd Phillips, the director.
Right. Now,
who you might know from The Hunger Games.
Oh.
Not Hunger Games. The Hangover trilogy. And he did a movie called War Dogs. And another movie called Due Date with Zach Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr.
Uh-huh.
So he's known for comedies.
Yes.
Some of them not very good. And then he got all edgy and like it's basically this movie's basically like a no one thinks I'm funny.
Well, okay, let's talk about, I suppose, the direction and the sets and the production of the film for a moment. Which I don't think I could fault much of that.
It looked good.
It looked amazing. It was produced well. There was interesting shots. There was some pretty full-on violence, actually.
Particularly towards the end.
Yeah.
So for most of the start, it's just sort of like nothing's happening. Everyone's just punching him and whatever. But then in the end, there's very red blood. Like,
yeah. And there's this one scene in particular where he just goes crazy on one of his clown friends, which was almost – I kind of wanted to ask you about this actually. I mean, there's this sort of element of humanizing a villain, a comic book villain. Mm-hmm. This is what this film is trying to do,
yeah.
Which I'm not sure if I agree with, and particularly when it comes to like – Tarantino level violence, or you know, Taxi Driver level violence. Yeah. I mean, sure, we want our superhero films to be violent, and like Deadpool's a really good example because that was maybe until this film the most violent comic book movie ever.
I think still is.
Yeah, probably still is. But
there's something about the violence in this though.
Well, in Deadpool they pull it off in such a way. I read a couple of the Deadpool comics, and they pull off the violence in Deadpool in such a way that it feels like a comic book.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in this film, nothing about
he's
feels like
spandex and he's got fun little superpowers.
And he's making jokes all the time. Yeah. But in this film, there's nothing about the violence that feels comic booky, which kind of bothered me a little bit because it's almost like there's this, I don't know whether it's like a false trust in even the villains that no one's like actually really dying or something like that in a comic book because it's a fantasy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like... Maybe that's naive, but what do you think about that? Because I think that's kind of, it's almost like a step too far for me.
Well, I guess like a film like Logan, that's very violent. Mm. And in a way that the X-Men films in particular hadn't been at all. They'd sort of been light fare and, you know, people wearing leather and tight pants and, you know. We're mutants. Whereas Logan was like, "Nah, we're gonna fuck you right up." But it was still comic booky. I don't know if I don't mind if my comic book movies are a little more heavy. However, this wasn't really a comic book movie.
Yeah,
they tried to.
Yeah,
I don't know. I didn't mind the violence just because of the violence, but it did. It just felt so heavy-handed. There's no subtlety. Going back to You Were Never Really Here, most of that violence, even though it's so visceral, that movie, most of the violence isn't even shown. It's always afterwards. Mm. Like you see him with the weapon in his hand and then he's got blood on him and you know exactly what happened. And that hurts more than this was just like, oh, okay, cool, good on you, Todd. Like, anyway, yeah, it annoys me a little bit because it really did just feel like an edgy movie. Like it was almost like
edgy for the sake of it.
Yeah, like 16-year-old angst lord edgy. Like that's it was almost embarrassing to watch. Like it felt like I was watching, like I was reading The Notebook. Like someone, you know, the notebook that's in the film.
Yes,
I almost felt like I was notebook. Reading like the director's notebook. Like that's kind of how it felt. Like no one liked Hangover 3. So I'm gonna make a edgy movie now.
Todd Phillips, don't listen to this, please.
And he's online. He's saying, "Oh, SJWs have ruined comedy. Like that's why I'm making dramas now." Like. It's like, there's heaps of good comedies out there and they don't all have to toe any particular political line.
Yeah.
It's just like, just because no one like laughs at you, you know, what's your name? Ed Helms, like tit job joke anymore. like what do you mean? Like, oh, now I have to make drama because it can't make, oh, fucking. Anyway, so that's just what I was thinking about the whole movie. Like,
we saw it with your brother as well, Liam, who has guested before on this show.
He certainly has. He saw it with, he came along and he was with his girlfriend and three of his friends. I didn't get to talk to them about it afterwards because they went out and I've been at work all day today. I haven't actually spoken to him about it.
So you don't know what he thinks.
But I know based on their little comments and we exchanged some looks throughout the movie, I heard his friends afterwards say like, oh, we live in a society. So, and that's kind of how I felt. Like maybe the real Joker is society all along. Like that's just what it felt like. Oh, I don't know. There were some things I did like.
Let's talk about what we liked.
I liked the delusion aspect of it.
Yeah.
There's a bit more of an overt delusion where he's watching the Rupert Pupkin show.
Yep.
And
they should have just called it late night with Rupert Pupkin.
and then he is on the show and he's meeting him, but you know very clearly that that's just his fantasy.
Yep.
But then there's another storyline with Zazie Beetz,
yep,
who plays his neighbor and they go on dates and she's really comforting to him. And I was like, what the fuck? There's no way this woman would ever be seduced by this man that is on the edge.
This disgusting man.
Yeah, exactly. why is she at the hospital comforting him? And then when that turned out to be a fake out, I was like, oh, of course it is. I felt stupid for not noticing earlier, but I quite liked that.
The way that they revealed that, though, bothered me because early on they set the precedent that he's delusional with the Murray Franklin show. Then what they do is they go through the movie and she's in it a lot with him, which, yes, if you don't realize that's a delusion early on, then maybe the movie's doing a good job or you're silly. And I think I was a bit silly and you were a bit silly.
I was a bit silly.
But then they reveal it in two ways. Firstly, he lets himself into her apartment and she says, you've got the wrong room, which to me is all you need to say. And then she's like, get out, you know, this is weird or whatever. And then they continue on with that. And I feel like that's all you needed to do. They then proceed to actually go back to the flashbacks and remove her from them, which I thought was, you know, a little bit like the Bruce Wayne stuff. It was a little bit just kind of like, we're not dumb. Like, we're not a dumb audience. We can understand what's happening.
We saw him have a fantasy earlier in the movie.
Yeah, like, and you find out that his mum suffered from delusions as well. Yeah. Like, it's all tied up. You don't have to spoon feed it, which for a movie that's trying to be so serious, it's a bit of a shame,
why
I think.
Why so serious?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've been waiting for that.
Well, actually, maybe now's a good time to talk about that. The Heath
Ledger
sized,
glossed over anything we liked about it.
The Heath Ledger sized elephant in the room. This isn't necessarily saying that, because like we both think Joaquin did a good job, and contextually, like a Heath Ledger performance wouldn't have worked in this film.
No. Would a Joaquin performance have worked in The Dark Knight?
Also, no.
Mm.
But, you know, everyone likes to compare their favourite Jokers. Mine's still Jared Leto.
Well, now, I haven't seen Suicide Squad, as you may know, but I'm definitely going to watch it soon because I'd love to see Birds of Prey, The Emancipation of Harley Quinn. Is that the correct title?
I think it's called Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous,
Fantabulous
Emancipation of Harley Quinn. But it's basically a Harley Quinn movie with the Birds of Prey in it and Ewan McGregor.
Well, which just looks sick.
It looks really good. And she's going to be in the Suicide Squad.
Yes. Weird naming. Because they had one called Suicide Squad.
Yeah. The next one's going to be called That's Suicide Squad.
That's so Suicide Squad.
That's Suicide Squad.
Okay. Well, one of the things that comes out first, I think, comparing Joaquin and Heath Ledger is that I think Heath Ledger was able to emote so much of what this movie does in terms of the Joker's mental state, I suppose. He's able to emote that amazingly clearly without any help from the story or the movie. And I think it's then weird to see this movie where it's like that's all we're thinking about in this film.
Mm. I wouldn't mind seeing Joaquin's Joker doing other things like...
Well, and I think that the character development is confusing to me because I kept waiting for... Because the Joker is an extremely charismatic and confident character,
uh-huh.
which doesn't happen in this film until it's too late.
Like and it does happen at the end.
It does happen, but it's all about getting there and, like, it was too much getting there. And it's also kind of like... I think that Heath Ledger's Joker is almost perfect because he's formulated, but he's able to show you that he's a loose cannon or he's like a fuse
and
is going
perfect
off.
For that film.
Perfect for that film. But I think in this movie, or just the Joker as a character, you don't really, like, knowing that he had a rough time ruins his illusion a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you need to kind of not know why he's so messed up for him to work. That's what makes him a good character.
They're trying to make him they made him sympathetic.
Yeah.
And he's not a sympathetic character.
No.
Even in this movie, but they are trying so hard, it seems like, to make him sympathetic.
Very, very hard. Too hard. And it ruins his illusion. It loses his je ne sais quoi that he has. I mean, the Joker is like one of my favorite characters of all time.
Do you like the Mark Hamill Joker?
Oh, I don't think I've seen any of that stuff since I was a kid, but I remember being fond of those cartoons.
Yeah.
And I'm really quite fond. I've never seen the Killing Joke movie, but I've read the comic, which this is also based on, because in that comic, Joker is a stand-up comedian. But I actually wish they had leaned into that story more. Even though that's
Taxi Driver pastiche that they were going for.
Yeah, like obviously the Killing Joke is a lot about Batman too, but yeah, they should have maybe used a bit. They didn't really appear to use any real source material, which is fine, I guess, but, like, maybe they should have.
And, I mean, I suppose one positive about this movie is that they're getting people to see a movie that is a little maybe out of people's comfort zones.
Yeah.
And that's always a positive, but that they have to slap Joker on it.
Yeah.
To get people to come see it. Like, no, just make...
Well,
like,
and that's
you were never really here, well, like that, they did last year.
Yeah, and that I think you're right. That's kind of sad because we should be able to tackle some of these quite serious issues, ranging from child abuse to mental problems to issues with a city that is broken that needs help.
Yeah.
But we can only seem to do that when there's a comic book character attached.
Yeah,
which is makes it a bit like pointless. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an experience.
Is Heath Ledger your favorite Joker?
He is. He is my favorite Joker.
You didn't know.
But just in the context of that, like in Tim Burton's Batman, Jack Nicholson works a treat. And you do get to see some of his backstory in that world that they've created. He's a gangster.
And
then he falls in a vat of toxic waste, which they've sort of avoided in The Dark Knight and this movie because it's a little bit too comic booky for the real world vibes that both Nolan and Todd Phillips have been going for. In Suicide Squad, the vat of toxic waste happens, And that's, you know, where he gets his pallor and his green locks, as opposed to dyeing his hair or whatever. But yeah, every Joker has worked for the movie that it's been the actor has been in. So yeah, Cesar Romero works very well in the old Batman series with his mustache painted over. Jack Nicholson works in the sort of campy but not 60s campy, like 80s leather campy Tim Burton one. And then Heath works for Nolan. Jared Leto is the perfect Joker for that abysmal Suicide Squad film. And then Edgelord Joaquin works a treat in this hollow wannabe tryhard angst lord film.
A film that I saw as well recently with Joaquin, which I don't know if we talked about at all, which we should probably do one day, is Inherent Vice. Just want to put that out there.
He's great in that too.
He's great in that. And that's, I mean, that's not really like this that much, but
it is a 70s vibe.
70s vibe. It's a bit of a character study too.
Uh-huh.
He plays a very different role, but he's kind of got curly hair.
Yeah. And he's in The Master.
He's in The
we
Master.
We watched that recently. And another great.
Did we say that one together?
We did. Another great intense performance.
Skinny one for him too.
If anyone hadn't seen like Paul Thomas Anderson's filmography with Joaquin Phoenix, and they only knew him from Walk the Line, and
I'm really proud of that.
but that and like Gladiator, are they like the big mainstream films that he's done?
Yeah, her.
And her. Which he plays a very different character.
Is a very different and a very good film.
Intense.
I like that.
Weirdo, as always, but a very different type of intense weirdo. But if they're the only sort of films you'd seen Joaquin Phoenix in, I think you'd be absolutely bowled over by his performance in Joker.
Mm.
And it would be enough to make this your best movie of all time. But if you've seen a few more of his performances, in which like, he's always good, this loses some of its fun because you've seen him play this character. Maybe not exactly, but you've seen shades of this character throughout all his work.
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree with that.
What did you think of the music?
There was like a score, right?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, there was. And then a few sort of Charlie Chaplin songs.
Well, that's right. There were kind of the jazzy songs. There was one Cream song towards the end, which kind of took me out of the movie a little bit just because I'm a big Cream fan. I don't know, I found it a weird song choice for some reason. And the score was, I suppose, not super memorable.
No, it wasn't memorable.
Because, yeah. I thought the sound design was incredible, though. I did think that. Especially some of the more like louder moments. It was a pretty dynamic film, which is good.
Yeah.
I actually hope it gets nominated in that category for Oscars. But yeah, I always kind of like picking, I don't know if we spoke about this when we were talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I've always kind of wanted to have the job of like picking songs for films, but I think that I'd never be able to finish a single soundtrack. Because I wouldn't know when it's the right time to use a song, like that Cream song. They used White Room by Cream. Do you know that song?
No, I might if I heard it.
Maybe that's why it was a good song choice, because it like is like an old 60s sort of rock classic that maybe has lost to time a little bit for most people. But for someone like me, I was like, oh, weird song choice.
Mm. Well, it's funny you say that, and listeners, check this out too. There's a show called Better Call Saul. It's a spin-off of Breaking Bad. And they have an insider podcast every episode.
Ah.
And they get different creatives on. Sometimes it's cast. Sometimes it's production design. Sometimes it's I think they had the composer on once. And one time they had the guy who picks the songs.
No way.
Yeah.
Can you find that for me?
It was so interesting. Yeah, yeah. Remind me. It was so interesting because they have to, you know, figure out the rights.
Yeah.
And whether a song evokes a certain feel or whether it's been used too many times so it evokes other movies if that matters or not. And it's so interesting the amount of thought and detail that goes into these things. And sometimes it's just too long or they need like they get a cover version or something. Like it's really interesting. I'll try and find the episode. But yeah, that I think you're spot on. That would be a really, really cool job to have.
Yeah. But like, you know, Tarantino's a good example of someone who gets it right like 90% of the time. I can't really fault, especially for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I can't really fault the soundtrack at all. Like he uses Mrs. Robinson, which to me seems like too obvious of a choice, but that was the right time to use an obvious, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, how do you reconcile that?
All right. Is there anything else that really you need to get out?
Nah. I feel good now. I feel
I'm pathetic. Really glad you didn't like it so much because I was kind of worried. Because I
we've been pretty
in sync
lately. Yeah,
it was like the cinematic equivalent of a giant eye roll. Like that's how I felt the whole movie. Okay, should we give it a score?
Yep,
I'm gonna give it a 5.
Flat 5.
Flat 5.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna mirror that. And just give it a flat 5 because, yeah, because, like, in summary, I mean, you know, there was definitely parts about it that I enjoyed. Like, it looked amazing. There was fun elements. De Niro was incredible. Joaquin was incredible too. But then it didn't meet the expectations.
No. No. Well, a flat 5 puts it the same as Tequila Sunrise. and the biscuit that we just ate, the TV snack. Well, we had 4.5 for that. So, but it's, yeah, flat 5. Tequila Sunrise, right near the bottom of the list, below New Jack City and Bob Le Flambeur on 5.5, and above King of New York and Gangs of New York, which have 4.25.
Now, where did The Dark Knight rank?
That's like in our top 10, I believe. Yeah, that's actually equal second.
Equal second.
So we've got The Sting on 10.
Yeah.
And we've got The Godfather, Goodfellas, Reservoir Dogs, and The Dark Knight all on 9.
The Dark Knight's on 9?
Yeah. Which is funny because Heat itself is 7.9. And what's funny is everyone who's making these Batman movies now, or these Joker movies, looking back to other crime films of the past for their inspiration. And sometimes you do it well. A la The Dark Knight.
Yep, yep.
Basically ripping off Heat. Or sometimes you do it, maybe other, you know what? Some people probably think that this is the best film of the year. And I know some people think that. But I don't know. Maybe they need to get out of their basement. No. Everyone's got different tastes.
If I was like 17 or something like that, I might think it was the best film I've seen all year.
I would have loved it if this could come out, I think.
I think I would have, and I guess whatever that means. Question for you is, I did a little bit of research, but what's sort of next for... Because, okay, to be clear, this isn't part of the DCEU.
No.
This is not
This is a standalone feature. Yeah.
And I didn't actually see... And I kind of liked that. They didn't have any sort of DC branding on it. It was just Joker. Like, it was just
Gotham
movie.
City, yeah. Batman, but...
Which I think was a good choice.
It wasn't like, you didn't hear like, oh, in Metropolis, the weather is... You didn't hear anything like that.
That would have been super on the nose, actually.
Oh, another thing that people think that Arthur Fleck is A. Fleck, like Affleck, which is a reference to Ben Affleck's Batman. That's what some people think. But that's why they chose that name.
But that's the Joker's name, yeah. Right?
Is it?
In the comics, is it not?
No. I mean, he's got all sorts of names.
Oh, so that's a new name for the character?
Yeah, it's just a new name for the character.
I assumed it was just like one of the ones from the comics.
No. I think it's a new name and people think that that's why they did it. Which is so stupid.
Okay, so what's next for Batman in particular? Now, there's a new Batman.
Yes.
Who?
Robert Pattinson.
That's right. That's who it is.
I'm so excited because his career after Twilight is so interesting. And I've hardly seen any of his work.
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
So...
And Jonah Hill is going to play one of play the villain.
Possibly
the Riddler. Possibly the Penguin. But no one knows. Maybe it's going to be Polka Dot Man.
Who?
Polka Dot Man.
Is he a villain?
The famous Batman villain, Polka Dot Man. Or maybe it's going to be Clayface or...
Well, okay, so not going to be a Joker villain. obviously.
No.
That's confirmed. Do you think they should do a Riddler or a Penguin, or should they pick a freshie?
I think they could do the Riddler because the last time they did the Riddler was Jim Carrey,
mm-hmm.
and they could easily do a fresh take on the Riddler and it'd be really interesting. I think they could also do the Penguin and it would be fine because it's been a long time between drinks for those characters.
Yes, much further than the Joker.
Yeah.
I for one, would love to see Danny DeVito do the Penguin again.
Oh, wouldn't that be
good? I don't think there'd be much difference.
No.
Especially if you put the makeup on.
And I've seen him on talk shows recently talking about making that movie and the monkey like bit him on the balls or something. And he tells a story.
That's right.
But he tells a story now and he does this little like...
He's probably become more penguin-y in his age.
Absolutely. No, I don't think it would be a bad thing to see the Penguin again or the Riddler. It was great when Nolan brought in Scarecrow and Bane. Like Bane was in Batman and Robin, but in a very different incarnation.
Yeah.
But no one had seen the Scarecrow before. I thought that was a really good choice, something new for that reboot.
Do you think that, take the Penguin, for instance, Riddler, I think, would be fairly easy to modernize and darkify. Mm-hmm. Penguin, though, you know, can you... I mean, I guess, you know, having only ever seen 89 Batman and Jack Nicholson Joker, it'd be hard to imagine Heath Ledger Joker. But can you imagine a modern-day take on the Penguin? Because Danny DeVito Penguin's pretty, like...
I wouldn't want it to be the Penguin, frankly.
Sure.
There's a guy called... Meredith Burgess, who plays the Penguin in the 60s, and he's like, wah, 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 yes, Batman, I'm a... and he wears disguises and he's got a long beak and he talks about birds and he's got a submarine. Like, I don't know. The Penguin is silly and Burton did it well.
Mm, mm.
Burton did it well. I don't think I'd want to see the Penguin in a young Batman reboot. Like,
do you think...
Gotham has the Penguin, and they did that okay in Gotham.
Have you seen all of that show?
I've seen none of that show except little snippets online.
But is it still going?
I think it's just finished.
Do you think that there's – obviously we live in a world where I feel like more so DC than Marvel are doing quite serious films. Do you think there's a space to go back to a bit of camp in our superhero films?
There is, but I don't know that Batman's the place to do it because there's so many more, there's so much more opportunity and different characters that people are aware of now.
Yeah.
In comic book, not just like in Marvel and in DC. Like everyone's aware of everyone else now as opposed to when it was just everyone knew Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
And maybe Wonder Woman and The Flash and that would be. But now... you know, people are going to see a movie about like a raccoon and a tree and some people from space in the Marvel universe. And they're doing Birds of Prey and they're expanding their horizons. They did fucking Aquaman, for Christ's sake. Like, Batman's not the place, I don't think, to bring camp back into the genre. I think leave that to the other characters.
Mm.
At the end of the day, like there's only... Oh, I'll tell you what, Lego Batman in the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie, he is fun. And they
different.
No, but it's very different. But that's like the only way you can get away with it now, I think.
Sure, sure.
Is Will Arnett going like, I'm so angsty, my parents are dead. Like,
which I feel like, I mean, I haven't seen that, but I feel like that's also a bit of a parody of like the Nolan films anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And... yeah, I think we've gone too far now. They're not gonna do it. But you can do it with any other characters, like the Flash movie with Ezra Miller. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, I think I still can't decide whether I'm gonna catch up with any of these ever. To be honest, I'm a little bit just like I've gone back and forth, particularly with the Marvel ones. I've gone back and forth of like, oh, should I watch them? And specifically. Definitely today after Martin Scorsese bagged them, I was like, I don't need to watch those.
No, what Marty says goes.
What Martin says goes. Yeah. But I'm keen to see the Harley Quinn one, so I'll watch Suicide Squad. But other than that, I saw Wonder Woman, but none of the other Justice League stuff has kind of interested me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Did you like that episode? Give us a line. Drop us a line.
Drop us a line. Twitter at the Podfather Pod. Facebook, the Podfather. Email us at thepodfatherpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Letterboxd, we've got a list.
We've got a list. Check out the list. We are, if not already, going to be on YouTube as well. So if you like to chuck on podcasts on YouTube at work or something like that, there'll be not really any visuals except for the live episodes. They'll be up there visually, rebirthed. And if we do any more live episodes as well.
Yep.
But on YouTube, in your podcast player of choice, which we hopefully already are in, as you're listening to us at this
hopefully,
point.
Hopefully, yes.
Let us know your feedback. We'll be back soon with more.
See you in 2 weeks. And she asked me when I left, oh, what are you doing this afternoon? Just like being polite. And I was like, she seems really cool. I don't want to tell her I'm recording a podcast.
What?
No. I was like, I'm hanging out with a friend.